on the strength of the treaty forged 500 years ago. But the upper class could afford hired swords, like this woman, to guard their lands bordering the immortal realm. It was an illusion of comfort, just as the markings on our threshold were. We all knew, deep down, that there was nothing to be done against the fairies. We'd all been told it, regardless of class or rank, from the moment we were born. The warnings sung to us while we were rocked in cradles, the rhymes chanted in schoolyards. One of the high fae could turn your bones to dust from 100 yards away. Not that my sisters or I had ever seen it. But we still tried to believe that something, anything, might work against them if we ever were to encounter them. There were 2 stalls in the market catering to those fears, offering up charms and baubles and incantations and bits of iron. I couldn't afford them, and if they did indeed work, they would buy us only a few minutes to prepare ourselves. Running was futile, so was fighting. But Nesta and Elaine still wore their iron bracelets whenever they left the cottage. Even Isaac had an iron cuff around one wrist, always tucked under his sleeve. He'd once offered to buy me one, but I'd refused. It had felt too personal, too much like payment, too permanent a reminder of whatever we were and weren't to each other. The mercenary transferred the coins to my waiting palm, and I tucked them into my pocket, their weight as heavy as a millstone. There was no possible chance that my sisters hadn't spotted the money. No chance they weren't already wondering how they might persuade me to give them some. "Thank you," I said to the mercenary, trying and failing to keep the bite from my voice as I felt my sisters sweep closer, like vultures circling a carcass. The mercenary stroked the wolf pelt. "A word of advice, from one hunter to another." I lifted my brows. "Don't go far into the woods. I wouldn't even get close to where you were yesterday. A wolf this size would be the least of your problems. More and more, I've been hearing stories about those things slipping through the wall." A chill spider walked down my spine. Are they going to attack? If it were true, I'd find a way to get my family off our miserable, damp territory and head south. Head far from the invisible wall that bisected our world before they could cross it. Once, long ago and for millennia before that, we had been slaves to high fae overlords. Once we had built them glorious, sprawling civilizations from our blood and sweat, built them temples to their feral gods. Once we had rebelled across every land and territory. The war had been so bloody, so destructive, that it took 6 mortal queens crafting the treaty for the slaughter to cease on both sides and for the wall to be constructed. The north of our world conceded to the high fae and fairies, who took their magic with them. The south to we cowering mortals, forever forced to scratch out a living from the earth. "No one knows what the fae are planning," the mercenary said, her face like stone. "We don't know if the High Lord's leash on their beasts is slipping, or if these are targeted attacks. I guarded for an old nobleman who claimed it had been getting worse these past 50 years. He got on a boat south 2 weeks ago and told me I should leave if I was smart. Before he sailed off, he admitted that he'd had word from one of his friends that in the dead of night, a pack of Martaks crossed the wall and tore half his village apart."
"Martaks?" I breathed.
I knew there were different types of fairies, that they varied as much as any other species of animal, but I knew only a few by name. The mercenary's night-dark eyes flickered. "Body big as a bear's, head something like a lion's, and 3 rows of teeth sharper than a shark's. And mean. Meaner than all 3 put together. They left the villagers in literal ribbons," the nobleman said. My stomach turned. Behind us, my sisters seemed so fragile, their pale skin so infinitely delicate and shreddable. Against something like the Martax, we'd never stand a chance. Those children of the Blessed were fools, fanatic fools. So we don't know what all these tacks mean, the mercenary went on, other than more hires for me, and you keeping well away from the wall. Especially if the High Fae start turning up, or worse, one of the High Lords. They would make the Martax seem like dogs. I studied her scarred hands, chapped from the cold. Have you ever faced another type of fairy? Her eyes shuddered. You don't want to know, girl. Not unless you want to be hurling up your breakfast. I was indeed feeling ill. Ill and jumpy. Was it deadlier than the Martax? I dared ask. The woman pulled back the sleeve of her heavy jacket, revealing a tanned, muscled forearm flecked with gruesome, twisted scars. The arc of them so similar to... Didn't have the brute force or size of a Martax, she said, but its bite was full of poison. 2 months. That's how long I was down. 4 months until I had the strength to walk again. She pulled up the leg of her trousers. Beautiful, I thought, even as the horror of it writhed in my gut. Against her tanned skin, the veins were black, solid black, spider-webbed and creeping like frost. Hela said there was nothing to be done for it, that I'm lucky to be walking with the poison still in my legs. Maybe it'll kill me one day. Maybe it'll cripple me. But at least I'll go knowing I killed it first. The blood in my own veins seemed to chill as she lowered the cuff of her pants. If anyone in the square had seen, no one dared speak about it, or to come closer. And I'd had enough for one day. So I took a step back, steadying myself against what she'd told me and shown me. Thanks for the warnings, I said. Her attention flicked behind me, and she gave a faintly amused smile. Good luck. Then a slender hand clamped onto my forearm, dragging me away. I knew it was Nesta before I even looked at her. They're dangerous, Nesta hissed, her fingers digging into my arm as she continued to pull me from the mercenary. Don't go near them again. I stared at her for a moment, then at Elaine, whose face had gone pale and tight. Is there something I need to know? I asked quietly. I couldn't remember the last time Nesta had tried to warn me about anything. Elaine was the only one she bothered to really look after. They're brutes and will take any copper they can get, even if it's by force. I glanced at the mercenary, who was still examining her new pelt. She robbed you? Not her, Elaine murmured. Some other one who passed through. We had only a few coins and he got mad, but why didn't you report him? Or tell me? What could you have done? Nesta sneered. Challenged him to a fight with your bow and arrows? And who in this sewer of a town would even care if we reported anything? What about your Thomas Mandray? I said coolly. Nesta's eyes flashed, but a movement behind me caught her eyes, and she gave me what I supposed was her attempt at a sweet smile, probably as she remembered the money I now carried. Your friend is waiting for you. I turned. Indeed, Isaac was watching from across the square, arms crossed as he leaned against a building. Though the eldest son of the only well-off farmer in our village, he was still lean from the winter, and his brown hair had turned shaggy. Relatively handsome, soft-spoken and reserved, but with a sort of darkness running beneath it all that had drawn us to each other, that shared understanding of how wretched our lives were and would always be. We'd vaguely known each other for years, since my family had moved to the village, but I had never thought much about him until we'd wound up walking down the main road together one afternoon. We'd only talked about the eggs he was bringing to market, and I'd admired the variation in colors within the basket he bore, browns and tans, and the palest blues and greens. Simple, easy, perhaps a bit awkward, but he'd left me at my cottage feeling not quite so alone. A week later, I pulled him into that decrepit barn. He'd been my first and only lover in the 2 years since. Sometimes we'd meet every night for a week. Others we'd go a month without setting eyes on each other. But every time was the same. A rush of shedding clothes and shared breaths and tongues and teeth. Occasionally we'd talk, or rather he'd talk about the pressures and burdens his father placed on him. Often we wouldn't say a word the entire time. I couldn't say our lovemaking was particularly skilled, but it was still a release, a reprieve, a bit of selfishness. There was no love between us, and never had been, at least what I assumed people meant when they talked about love. Yet part of me had sunk when he'd said he would soon be married. I wasn't yet desperate enough to ask him to see me after he was wed. Isaac inclined his head in a familiar gesture and then ambled off down the street, out of town and to the ancient barn where he would be waiting. We were never inconspicuous about our dealings with each other, but we did take measures to keep it from being too obvious. Nesta clicked her tongue, crossing her arms. I do hope you two are taking precautions. It's a bit late to pretend to care, I said. But we were careful. Since I couldn't afford it, Isaac himself took the contraceptive brew. He knew I wouldn't have touched him otherwise. I reached into my pocket, drawing out a 20-mark copper. Elaine sucked in a breath, and I didn't bother to look at either of my sisters as I pushed it into her palm and said, I'll see you at home. Later, after another dinner of venison, when we were all gathered around the fire for the quiet hour before bed, I watched my sisters whispering and laughing together. They'd spent every copper I'd given them. On what? I didn't know, though Elaine had brought back a new chisel for our father's wood carving. The cloak and boots they'd whined about the night before had been too expensive, but I hadn't scolded them for it. Not when Nesta went out a second time to chop more wood without my asking. Mercifully, they'd avoided another confrontation with the children of the blessed. My father was dozing in his chair, his cane laid across his gnarled knee. As good a time as any to broach the subject of Thomas Mandray with Nesta, I turned to her, opening my mouth. But there was a roar that half deafened me, and my sisters screamed as snow burst into the room, and an enormous, growling shape appeared in the doorway. Chapter 4. I didn't know how the wooden hilt of my hunting knife had gotten into my hand. The first few moments were a blur of the snarling of a gigantic beast with golden fur, the shrieking of my sisters, the blistering cold cascading into the room, and my father's terror-stricken face. Not a Martax, I realized, though the relief was short-lived. The beast had to be as large as a horse, and while his body was somewhat feline, his head was distinctly wolfish. I didn't know what to make of the curled, elk-like horns that protruded from his head. But lion or hound or elk, there was no doubting the damage his black, dagger-like claws and yellow fangs could inflict. Had I been alone in the woods, I might have let myself be swallowed by fear, might have fallen to my knees and wept for a clean, quick death. But I didn't have room for terror. Wouldn't give it an inch of space, despite my heart's wild pounding in my ears. Somehow, I wound up in front of my sisters, even as the creature reared onto its hind legs and bellowed through a maw full of fangs, "Murderers!" But it was another word that echoed through me. Very. Those ridiculous wards on our threshold were as good as cobwebs against him. I should have asked the mercenary how she'd killed that fairy. But the beast's thick neck, that looked like a good home for my knife. I dared a glance over my shoulder. My sisters screamed, kneeling against the wall of the hearth, my father crouched in front of them. Another body for me to defend. Stupidly, I took another step toward the fairy, keeping the table between us, fighting the shaking in my hand. My bow and quiver were across the room, past the beast. I'd have to get around him to reach the ash arrow, and buy myself enough time to fire it. Murderers! The beast roared again, hackles raised. Please, my father babbled from behind me, failing to find it in himself to come to my side. Whatever we have done, we did so unknowingly, and—
We didn't kill anyone, Nesta added, choking on her sobs, arm lifted over her head, as if that tiny iron bracelet would do anything against the creature. I snatched another dinner knife off the table, the best I could do unless I found a way to get to the quiver. Get out, I snapped at the creature, brandishing the knives before me. No iron in sight that I could use as a weapon, unless I chucked my sister's bracelets at him. Get out and be gone. With my trembling hands, I could barely keep my grip on the hilts. A nail. I'd take a damned iron nail if it were available. He bellowed at me in response, and the entire cottage shook, the plates and cups rattling against one another. But it left his massive neck exposed. I hurled my hunting knife. Fast, so fast I could barely see it, he slashed out with a paw, sending it skittering away as he snapped for my face with his teeth. I leaped back, almost stumbling over my cowering father. The fairy could have killed me. Could have, yet the lunge had been a warning. Nesta and Elaine, weeping, prayed to whatever long-forgotten gods might still be skulking about.
Who killed him?
The creature stalked toward us. He set a paw on the table, and it groaned beneath him. His claws thudded as they embedded in the wood one by one. I dared another step forward as the beast stretched his snout over the table to sniff at us. His eyes were green and flecked with amber. Not animal eyes, not with their shape and coloring. My voice was surprisingly even as I challenged, "Killed who?" He growled, low and vicious. "The wolf," he said, and my heart stumbled a beat. The roar was gone, but the wrath lingered, perhaps even traced with sorrow. Elaine's wail reached a high-pitched shriek. I kept my chin up. A wolf?
A large wolf with a gray coat, he snarled in response.
Would he know if I lied? Fairies couldn't lie. All mortals knew that. But could they smell the lies on human tongues? We had no chance of escaping this through fighting, but there might be other ways. If it was mistakenly killed, I said to the beast as calmly as I could, what payment could we offer in exchange? This was all a nightmare, and I'd awaken in a moment beside the fire, exhausted from my day at the market and my afternoon with Isaac. The beast let out a bark that could have been a bitter laugh. He pushed off the table to pace in a small circle before the shattered door. The cold was so intense that I shivered.
The payment you must offer is the one demanded by the treaty between our realms.
For a wolf? I retorted, and my father murmured my name in warning. I had vague memories of being read the treaty during my childhood lessons, but could recall nothing about wolves. The beast whirled on me.
Who killed the wolf?
I stared into those jade eyes, I did. He blinked and glanced at my sisters, then back at me, at my thinness, no doubt seeing only frailness instead.
Surely you lie to save them.
We didn't kill anything, Elaine wept. Please, please spare us.
Nesta hushed her sharply through her own sobbing, but pushed Elaine farther behind her. My chest caved in at the sight of it. My father climbed to his feet, grunting at the pain in his leg as he bobbled, but before he could limp toward me, I repeated, I killed it. The beast, who had been sniffing at my sisters, studied me. I squared my shoulders. I sold its hide at the market today. If I had known it was a fairy, I wouldn't have touched it.
Liar, he snarled. You knew. You would have been more tempted to slaughter it if you had known it was one of my kind.
True, true, true. Can you blame me?
Did it attack you? Were you provoked?
I opened my mouth to say yes, but... No, I said, letting out a snarl of my own. But considering all that your kind has done to us, considering what your kind still likes to do to us, even if I had known beyond a doubt, it was deserved. Better to die with my chin held high than groveling like a cowering worm. Even if his answering growl was the definition of wrath and rage. The firelight shone upon his exposed fangs, and I wondered how they'd feel on my throat, and how loudly my sisters would scream before they, too, died. But I knew, with a sudden, uncoiling clarity, that Nesta would buy Elaine time to run. Not my father, whom she resented with her entire steely heart, not me, because Nesta had always known and hated that she and I were two sides of the same coin and that I could fight my own battles. But Elaine, the flower grower, the gentle heart, Nesta would go down swinging for her. It was that flash of understanding that had me angling my remaining knife at the beast. What is the payment the treaty requires? His eyes didn't leave my face as he said,
A life for a life. Any unprovoked attacks on fairy kind by humans are to be paid only by a human life in exchange.
My sisters quieted their weeping. The mercenary in town had killed a fairy, but had attacked her first. I didn't know, I said. I didn't know about that part of the treaty. Fairies couldn't lie. And he spoke plainly enough, no word twisting.
Most of you mortals have chosen to forget that part of the treaty, he said, which makes punishing you far more enjoyable.
My knees quaked. I couldn't escape this, couldn't outrun this, couldn't even try to run since he blocked the way to the door. Do it outside, I whispered, my voice trembling. Not here. Not where my family would have to wash away my blood and gore, if he even let them live. The fairy huffed a vicious laugh.
Willing to accept your fate so easily?
When I just stared at him, he said,
For having the nerve to request where I slaughter you, I'll let you in on a secret, human. Prithian must claim your life in some way for the life you took from it. So as a representative of the immortal realm, I can either gut you like swine, or you can cross the wall and live out the remainder of your days in Prithian.
I blinked. What? He said slowly, as if I were indeed as stupid as a swine.
You can either die tonight, or offer your life to Prithian by living in it forever, forsaking the human realm.
Do it, Vera, my father whispered from behind me. Go!
I didn't look at him as I said, Live where?
Every inch of Prithian is lethal to us. I'd be better off dying tonight than living in pure terror across the wall until I met my end in doubtlessly an even more awful way.
I have lands,
the fairy said quietly, almost reluctantly.
I will grant you permission to live there.
Why bother?
Perhaps a fool's question, but...
You murdered my friend, the beast snarled. Murdered him, skinned his corpse, sold it at the market, and then said he deserved it. And yet you have the nerve to question my generosity?
How typically human, he seemed to silently add.
You didn't need to mention the loophole. I stepped so close the fairy's breath heated my face. Fairies couldn't lie, but they could omit information.
The beast snarled again.
Foolish of me to forget that humans have such low opinions of us. Do you humans no longer understand mercy?
He said, his fangs inches from my throat.
Let me make this clear for you, girl. You can either come live at my home in Prithian, offer your life for the wolves in that way, or you can walk outside right now and be shredded to ribbons. Your choice.
My father's hobbling steps sounded before he gripped my shoulder.
Please, good sir. Thera is my youngest. I beseech you to spare her. She is all. She is all.
But whatever he meant to say died in his throat as the beast roared again. But hearing those few words he'd managed to get out, the effort he'd made, it was like a blade to my belly. My father cringed as he said,
Please, silence, the creature snapped,
and rage boiled up in me so blistering it was an effort to keep from lunging to stab my dagger in his eye. But by the time I had so much as raised my arm, I knew he would have his maw around my neck.
I can get gold, my father said, and my rage guttered.
The only way he would get money was by begging. Even then, he'd be lucky to get a few coppers. I'd seen how pitiless the well-off were in our village. The monsters in our mortal realm were just as bad as those across the wall.
The beast sneered. How much is your daughter's life worth to you? Do you think it equates to a sum?
Nesta still had Elaine behind her, Elaine's face so pale it matched the snow drifting in from the open door. But Nesta monitored every move the beast made, her brows lowered. She didn't bother to look at my father, as if she knew his answer already. When my father didn't reply, I dared another step toward the beast, drawing his attention to me. I had to get him out, get him away from my family. From the way he'd brushed away my knife, any hope of escaping lay in somehow sneaking up on him. With his hearing, I doubted I'd get a chance anytime soon, at least until he believed I was docile. If I tried to attack him or fled before then, he would destroy my family for the sheer enjoyment of it. Then he would find me again. I had no choice but to go. And then, later, I might find an opportunity to slit the beast's throat, or at least disable him long enough to flee. As long as the fairies couldn't find me again, they couldn't hold me to the treaty. Even if it made me a cursed oathbreaker. But in going with him, I would be breaking the most important promise I'd ever made. Surely it trumped an ancient treaty that I hadn't even signed. I loosened my grip on the hilt of my remaining dagger and stared into those green eyes for a long, silent while before I said, When do we go? Those lupine features remained fierce, vicious. Any lingering hope I had of fighting died as he moved to the door. No, to the quiver I'd left behind it. He pulled out the ash arrow, sniffed, and snarled at it.
With two movements, he snapped it in half and chucked it into the fire behind my sisters before turning back to me. I could smell my doom on his breath as he said,
"Now."
Now.
Even Elaine lifted her head to gape at me in mute horror. But I couldn't look at her, couldn't look at Nesta, not when they were still crouched there, still silent.
I turned to my father. His eyes glistened, so I glanced to the few cabinets we had, faded two yellow daffodils curving over the handles.
Now. The beast paced in the doorway. I didn't want to contemplate where I was going or what he would do with me. Running would be foolish until it was the right time.
"The venison should hold you for 2 weeks," I said to my father as I gathered my clothes to bulk up against the cold.
"Start on the fresh meat, then work your way through to the jerky. You know how to make it."
"Farah," my father breathed.
But I continued as I fastened my cloak. "I left the money from the pelts on the dresser," I said. "It will last you for a time, if you're careful." I finally looked at my father again and allowed myself to memorize the lines of his face. My eyes stung, but I blinked the moisture away as I stuffed my hands into my worn gloves.
"When spring comes, hunt in the grove just south of the big bend in Silver Spring Creek. The rabbits make their warrens there. Ask Isaac Hale to show you how to make snares. I taught him last year."
My father nodded, covering his mouth with a hand. The beast growled his warning and prowled out into the night. I made to follow him, but paused to look at my sisters, still crouched by the fire, as if they wouldn't dare to move until I was gone. Elaine mouthed my name, but kept cowering, kept her head down. So I turned to Nesta, whose face was so similar to my mother's, so cold and unrelenting.
"Whatever you do," I said quietly, "don't marry Thomas Mandray. His father beats his wife, and none of his sons do anything to stop it." Nesta's eyes widened, but I added, "Bruises are harder to conceal than poverty."
Nesta stiffened, but said nothing. Both of my sisters said absolutely nothing as I turned toward the open door. But a hand wrapped around my arm, tugging me into a stop. Turning me around to face him, my father opened and closed his mouth. Outside, the beast, sensing I'd been detained, sent a snarl rumbling into the cottage.
"Farah," my father said.
His fingers trembled as he grasped my gloved hands, but his eyes became clearer and bolder than I'd seen them in years.
"You were always too good for here, Farah. Too good for us. Too good for everyone."
He squeezed my hands.
"If you ever escape, ever convince them that you've paid the debt, don't return."
I hadn't expected a heart-wrenching goodbye, but I hadn't imagined this either.
"Don't ever come back," my father said, releasing my hands to shake me by the shoulders. "Farah."
He stumbled over my name, his throat bobbing.
"You go somewhere new, and you make a name for yourself."
Beyond, the beast was just a shadow. A life for a life. But what if the life offered as payment also meant losing three others? The thought alone was enough to steal me, anchor me. I'd never told my father of the promise I'd made my mother, and there was no use explaining it now. So I shrugged off his grip and left. I let the sounds of the snow crunching underfoot
drive out my father's words as I followed the beast to the night-shrouded woods. Chapter 5. Every step toward the line of trees was too swift, too light, too soon, carrying me to whatever torment and misery awaited. I didn't dare look back at the cottage. We entered the line of trees. Darkness beckoned beyond. But a white mare was patiently waiting, unbound, beside a tree, her coat like fresh snow in the moonlight. She only lowered her head, as if in respect of all things, as the beast lumbered up to her. He motioned with a giant paw for me to mount. Still the horse remained calm, even as he passed close enough to gut her in one swipe. It had been years since I'd ridden, and I'd only ridden a pony at that, but I savored the warmth of the horse against my half-frozen body as I climbed into the saddle and she set into a walk. Without light to guide me, I let her trail the beast. They were nearly the same size. I wasn't surprised when we headed northward, toward fairy territory, though my stomach clenched so tightly it ached. Live with him. I could live out the rest of my mortal life on his lands. Perhaps this was merciful. But then, he hadn't specified in what manner exactly I would live. The treaty forbade fairies from taking us as slaves, but perhaps that excluded humans who'd murdered fairies. We'd likely go to whatever rift in the wall he'd used to get here, to steal me. And once we went through the invisible wall, once we were in Prithian, there was no way for my family to ever find me. I'd be little more than a lamb in a kingdom of wolves. Wolves. Wolf. Murdered a fairy. That was what I'd done. My throat went dry. I'd killed a fairy. I couldn't bring myself to feel badly about it, not with my family left behind me to surely starve, not when it meant one less wicked, awful creature in the world. The beast had burned my ash arrow, so I'd have to rely on luck to get even a splinter of the wood again, if I was to stand a chance of killing him, or slowing him down. Knowledge of that weakness, of their susceptibility to ash, was the only reason we'd ever survived against the High Fae during the ancient uprising, a secret betrayed by one of their own. My blood chilled further as I uselessly scanned for any signs of the narrow trunk and explosion of branches that I'd learned marked ash trees. I'd never seen the forest so still. Whatever was out there had to be tame compared to the beast beside me, despite the horse's ease around him. Hopefully he would keep other fairies away after we entered his realm. Prithian. The word was a death knell that echoed through me again and again. Lands. He'd said he had lands, but what kind of dwelling? My horse was beautiful, and its saddle was crafted of rich leather, which meant he had some sort of contact with civilized life. I'd never heard the specifics of what the lives of fairies or high fae were like. Never heard much about anything other than their deadly abilities and appetites. I clenched the reins to keep my hands from shaking. There were few first-hand accounts of Prithian itself. The mortals who went over the wall, either willingly as tributes from the children of the blessed or stolen, never came back. I'd learned most of the legends from villagers, though my father had occasionally offered up a milder tale or two on the nights he made an attempt to remember we existed. As far as we knew, the High Fae still governed the northern parts of our world. From our enormous island over the narrow sea separating us from the massive continent, across depthless fjords and frozen wastelands and sand-blasted deserts, all the way to the great ocean on the other side. Some fairy territories were empires. Some were overseen by kings and queens. Then there were places like Prithian, divided and ruled by 7 high lords, beings of such unyielding power that legend claimed they could level buildings, break apart armies, and butcher you before you could blink. I didn't doubt it. No one had ever told me why humans chose to linger in our territory when so little space had been granted to us and we remained in such close proximity to Prithian. Fools. Whatever humans had stayed here after the war must have been suicidal fools to live so close. Even with the centuries-old treaty between the mortal and fairy realms, there were rifts in the warded wall separating our lands, holes big enough for those lethal creatures to slip into our territory to amuse themselves with tormenting us. That was the side of Prithian that the children of the Blessed never deigned to acknowledge. Perhaps a side of Prithian I'd soon witness. My stomach turned. Live with him, I reminded myself again and again and again. Live, not die. Though I supposed I could also live in a dungeon. He would likely lock me up and forget that I was there, forget that humans needed things like food and water and warmth. Prowling ahead of me, the beast's horns spiraled toward the night sky, and tendrils of hot breath curled from his snout. We had to make camp at some point. The border of Prithian was days away. Once we stopped, I would keep awake for the entirety of the night and never let him out of my sight. Even though he'd burned my ash arrow, I'd smuggled my remaining knife in my cloak. Maybe tonight would grant me an opportunity to use it. But it was not my own doom I contemplated as I let myself tumble into dread and rage and despair. As we rode on, the only sounds snow crunching beneath paws and hooves, I alternated between a wretched smugness at the thought of my family starving and thus realizing how important I was, and a blinding agony at the thought of my father begging in the streets, his ruined leg giving out on him as he stumbled from person to person. Every time I looked at the beast, I could see my father limping through town, pleading for coppers to keep my sisters alive. Worse, what Nesta might resort to in order to keep Elaine alive. She wouldn't mind my father's death, but she would lie and steal and sell anything for Elaine's sake, and her own as well. I took in the way the beast moved, trying to find any weakness. I could detect none. What manner of fairy are you? I asked, the words nearly swallowed up by the snow and trees and star-heavy sky. He didn't bother to turn around. He didn't bother to say anything at all. Fair enough. I'd killed his friend, after all. I tried again. Do you have a name? Or anything to curse him by? A huff of air that could have been a bitter laugh. Does it even matter to you, human? I didn't answer. He might very well change his mind about sparing me. But perhaps I would escape before he decided to gut me. I would grab my family and we'd stow away on a ship and sail far, far away. Perhaps I would try to kill him, regardless of the futility, regardless of whether it constituted another unprovoked attack, just for being the one who came to claim my life, when these fairies valued ours so little. The mercenary had survived. Maybe I could too. Maybe. I opened my mouth to again ask for his name, but a growl of annoyance rippled out of him. I didn't have a chance to struggle, to fight back, when a charged metallic tang stung my nose. Exhaustion slammed down upon me, and blackness swallowed me whole. I awoke with a jolt atop the horse, secured by invisible bonds. The sun was already high. Magic. That's what the tang had been, what was keeping my limbs tucked in tight, preventing me from going for my knife. I recognized the power deep in my bones from some collective mortal memory and terror. How long had it kept me unconscious? How long had he kept me unconscious, rather than have to speak to me? Gritting my teeth, I might have demanded answers from him, might have shouted to where he still lumbered ahead, heedless of me. But then, chirping birds flitted past me, and a mild breeze kissed my face. I spied a hedge-bordered metal gate ahead. My prison or my salvation? I couldn't decide which. 2 days. It took 2 days from my cottage to reach the wall and enter the southernmost border of Prithian. Had I been held in an enchanted sleep for that long? Bastard. The gate swung open without porter or sentry, and the beast continued through. Whether I wanted to or not, my horse followed after him. Chapter 6. The estate sprawled across a rolling green land. I'd never seen anything like it. Even our former manor couldn't compare. It was veiled in roses and ivy, with patios and balconies and staircases sprouting from its alabaster sides. The grounds were encased by woods, but stretched so far that I could barely see the distant line of the forest. So much color, so much sunlight and movement and texture, I could hardly drink it in fast enough. To paint it would be useless, would never do it justice. My awe might have subdued my fear had the place not been so wholly empty and silent. Even the garden through which we walked, following a gravel path to the main doors of the house, seemed hushed and sleeping. Above the array of amethyst irises and pale snowdrops and butter-yellow daffodils swaying in the balmy breeze, the faint stench of metal ticked my nostrils. Of course it would be magic, because it was spring here. What wretched power did they possess to make their lands so different from ours, to control the seasons and weather as if they owned them? Sweat trickled down my spine as my layers of clothing turned suffocating. I rotated my wrists and shifted in the saddle. Whatever bonds had held me were gone. The ferry meandered on ahead, leaping nimbly up the grand marble staircase that led to the giant oak doors in one mighty fluid movement. The doors swung open for him on silent hinges, and he prowled inside. He'd planned his entire arrival, no doubt, keeping me unconscious so I didn't know where I was, didn't know the way home or what other deadly fairy territories might be lurking between me and the wall. I felt for my knife, but found only layers of frayed clothes. The thought of those claws pawing through my cloak to find my knife made my mouth go dry. I shoved away the fury and terror and disgust as my horse came to a stop of her own accord at the foot of the stairs. The message was clear enough. The towering estate house seemed to be watching, waiting. I glanced over my shoulder toward the still open gates. If I were to bolt, it would have to be now. South. All I had to do was go south, and I would eventually make it to the wall, if I didn't encounter anything before then. I tugged on the reins, but the mare remained stationary, even as I dug my heels into her sides. I let out a low, sharp hiss. Fine. On foot. My knees buckled as I hit the ground, bits of light flashing in my vision. I grasped the saddle and winced as soreness and hunger racked my senses. Now, I had to go now. I made to move, but the world was still spinning and flashing. Only a fool would run with no food, no strength. I wouldn't get half a mile like this. I wouldn't get half a mile before he caught me and tore me to ribbons, as he'd promised. I took a long, shuddering breath. Food. Getting food, then running at the next opportune moment. That sounded like a solid plan. When I was steady enough to walk, I left the horse at the bottom of the stairs, taking the steps one at a time. My breath tight in my chest, I passed through the open doors and into the shadows of the house. Inside, it was even more opulent. Black and white checkered marble shone at my feet, flowing to countless doors and a sweeping staircase. A long hall stretched ahead to the giant glass doors at the other end of the house, and through them I glimpsed a second garden, grander than the one out front. No sign of a dungeon, no shouts or pleas rising up from hidden chambers below. No, just a low growl from a nearby room, so deep that it rattled the vases overflowing with fat clusters of hydrangea atop the scattered hall tables. As if in response, an open set of polished wooden doors swung wider to my left. A command to follow. My fingers shook as I rubbed my eyes. I'd known the High Fae had once built themselves palaces and temples around the world, buildings that my mortal ancestors had destroyed after the war out of spite. But I'd never considered how they might live today, the elegance and wealth they might possess, never contemplated that the fairies, these feral monsters, might own estates grander than any mortal dwelling. I tensed as I entered the room. A long table, longer than any we'd ever possessed at our manor, filled most of the space. It was laden with food and wine, so much food, some of it wafting tendrils of steam that my mouth watered. At least it was familiar and not some strange fairy delicacy. Chicken, bread, peas, fish, asparagus, lamb. It could have been a feast at any mortal manor. Another surprise. The beast padded to the oversized chair at the head of the table. I lingered by the threshold, gazing at the food, all that hot, glorious food that I couldn't eat. That was the first rule we were taught as children, usually in songs or chants. If misfortune forced you to keep company with a fairy, you never drank their wine, never ate their food, ever. Unless you wanted to wind up enslaved to them in mind and soul, unless you wanted to wind up dragged back to Prithian. Well, the second part had already happened, but I might stand a chance at avoiding the first. The beast plopped into the chair, the wood groaning, and in a flash of white light, turned into a golden-haired man. I stifled a cry and pushed myself against the paneled wall beside the door, feeling for the molding of the threshold, trying to gauge the distance between me and escape. This beast was not a man, not a lesser fairy. He was one of the High Fae, one of their ruling nobility, beautiful, lethal, and merciless. He was young, or at least what I could see of his face seemed young. His nose, cheeks, and brows were covered by an exquisite golden mask embedded with emeralds shaped like whorls of leaves. Some absurd High Fae fashion, no doubt. It left only his eyes, looking the same as they had in his beast form, strong jaw and mouth for me to see, and the latter tightened into a thin line.
"You should eat something," he said.
Unlike the elegance of his mask, the dark green tunic he wore was rather plain, accented only with a leather baldric across his broad chest. It was more for fighting than style, even though he bore no weapons I could detect. Not just one of the High Fae, but a warrior, too. I didn't want to consider what might require him to wear a warrior's attire,
and tried not to look too hard at the leather of the baldric gleaming in the sunlight streaming in through the bank of windows behind him. I hadn't seen a cloudless sky like that in months. He filled a glass of wine from an exquisitely cut crystal decanter and drank deeply, as if he needed it. I inched toward the door, my heart beating so fast I thought I'd bomb it. The cool metal of the door's hinges bit into my fingers. If I moved fast, I could be out of the house and sprinting for the gate within seconds. He was undoubtedly faster, but chucking some of those pretty pieces of hallway furniture in his path might slow him down. Though his fey ears, with their delicate pointed arches, would pick up any whisper of movement from me.
"Who are you?"
I managed to say. His light golden hair was so similar to the color of his beast form's pelt. Those giant claws undoubtedly still lurked just below the surface of his skin.
"Sit," he said gruffly, waving a broad hand to encompass the table. "Eat."
I ran through the chants in my head again and again. Not worth it. Easing my ravenous hunger was definitely not worth the risk of being enslaved to him in mind and soul. He let out a low growl.
"Unless you'd rather faint?"
"It's not safe for humans," I managed to say, offense be damned. He huffed a laugh, more feral than anything.
"The food is fine for you to eat, human."
Those strange green eyes pinned me to the spot, as if he could detect every muscle in my body that was priming to bolt.
"Leave, if you want," he added with a flash of teeth. "I'm not your jailer. The gates are open. You can live anywhere in Prithian."
And no doubt be eaten or tormented by a wretched fairy. But while every inch of this place was civilized and clean and beautiful, I had to get out, had to get back. That promise to my mother, cold and vain as she was all I had. I made no move toward the food.
"Fine," he said, the word laced with a growl, and began serving himself.
I didn't have to face the consequences of refusing him another time as someone strode past me, heading right for the head of the table.
"Well,"
the stranger said. Another high fey, red-haired and finely dressed in a tunic of muted silver. He too wore a mask. He sketched a bow to the seated male and then crossed his arms. Somehow he hadn't spotted me where I was still pressed against the wall.
"Well, what?"
My captor cocked his head, the movement more animal than human.
"Is Andrus dead, then?"
A nod from my captor.
"Savior, whatever he was." "I'm sorry," he said quietly.
"How?" the stranger demanded, his knuckles white as he gripped his muscled arms.
"An ash arrow,"
said the other. His red-haired companion hissed.
"The treaty's summons led me to the mortal. I gave her safe haven."
"A girl. A mortal girl actually killed Andrus." Not a question so much as a venom-coated string of words. He glanced at the end of the table where my empty chair stood.
"And the summons found the girl responsible."
The golden-masked one gave a low, bitter laugh and pointed at me.
"The treaty's magic brought me right to her doorstep."
The stranger whirled with fluid grace. His mask was bronze and fashioned after a fox's features, concealing all but the lower half of his face, along with most of what looked like a wicked, slashing scar from his brow down to his jaw. It didn't hide the eye that was missing, or the carved golden orb that had replaced it and moved as though he could use it. It fixed on me. Even from across the room, I could see his remaining russet eye widen. He sniffed once, his lips curling a bit to reveal straight white teeth, and then he turned to the other fairy.